And good afternoon and welcome to the podcast show. My name's Tristan Lowe. It's the Over 40s Fitness Show. It's Saturday, the 29th of September. And today I've got with me...
Joe Cheatham from Zen Garden and Paving Services.
Joe. Hi, Joe. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thanks, Tristan. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks for coming in, sir.
Good stuff.
All right. Joe, tell us about Zen Gardening Services. What do you do?
So basically, we offer design and creation for gardens in people's homes. The vision is a world where we see gardens used as medicine for the soul. So it's basically the remedial values that we try to include into our designs.
Right, you gardening for the soul. Whose soul?
Well, the client's soul.
Okay. All right, so essentially you go out to people's houses, to people's gardens, and you design what they visualise or what you visualise?
It's across the two, really. Often they have an idea of what they want to achieve with the garden. However, I'll have a vision of the aesthetics, and we'll go in, I'll sort of interview them as much as they interview me, and then together we try and create a unique design for their personality.
Okay, and I'm imagining then, because I've seen some of your work, and you've done some work for people I know in Lincoln as well, it's not an overnight job, is it?
Not really. I mean, often there's a couple of meets, and we go in, we try to investigate their style with how their home is inside, and one of the main objectives is trying to get the home to then carry on outside, so it's an extension of their living space outdoors.
Yeah, and I've seen that on television when they talk about extend your living space into the outdoors, kind of thing I've seen on a gardening program or even Grand Designs. That shows my limit of knowledge of landscaping. Okay, so what's the hard part of it? Is it the foundation work?
For me, I don't find any of it hard just because I enjoy it so much. But physically, yeah, there's a bit of graft. Like with everything, if the foundation's key, if you get your preparation right, the rest of it is then fairly easy and enjoyable.
Yeah. So, that works with a lot of things though, Joe. Surely, if you get your foundations right, everything else on top will work out right. You know, so
yeah.
Okay, all right. Gardening and landscaping. Right, have you got a website?
We have got a website, yeah.
Where would our listeners go to for your website? What's it called?
So our website is zengardenandpavingservices.co.uk.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Also on Facebook as well.
You've got a Facebook
Instagram
page. Yeah, and they just go to Facebook, Zen Gardening.
That's it, Zen Garden and Paving Services, yeah.
Superb. All right, okay. You've got a telephone number they can catch you on?
Yeah, you can call us on 07932 403 414.
All right,
you can call us on our landline, which is 01526 398 707, but before 6 o'clock, because I have a very young girl who's going to sleep and if you wake her up, my missus won't be very happy.
Of course not. No, because I happen to know you're a new dad as well.
Second
or third time?
This is my second daughter.
Your second?
Yeah.
Yep. All right, superb, Joe. All right, let's start. Apart from we're talking about your profession and your line of work and services, there's another reason, the main reason why we got you in here today, Joe. And it's because the Over 40s Fitness Show, there's always an underlying thread of health and fitness. You've recently completed a charity swim.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, tell us all about it. Who is it for? What was the charity and where?
So, yeah, this originally started, my grandfather did a lot of charity work for people with hearing issues. And one of the main charities that he supported was Hearing Dogs for the Deaf. And then my grandfather passed away earlier this year, and I just thought it'd be nice to do something in honour of him.
Sure.
To try and keep that charity work going. So we chose two charities. We chose to support Hearing Dogs for the Deaf.
Yeah.
And then we also chose to support the Children's Cancer Ward at Adam Brooks Hospital.
Okay, yeah.
And that's where Grandad spent quite a bit of his time for his treatment. And the ward.
Oh, okay, right. These are local charities, or are they regional, or are they national?
Adam Brooks, obviously, that's based in Cambridgeshire.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest hospitals in the UK. We want to give back to the hospital, just sort of, you know, as a thank you for what they did for Grandad and to help these kids on their way. And then the Hearing Dogs for the Deaf, it's again, is a national charity.
Great. Okay. Tell us about Joe. When you started training and how you started training for this charity swim.
Yeah. The start of it wasn't enjoyable, to be honest. It was
indoors or outdoors?
Outdoors. Yeah. So majority of the training has been outside, open water training.
Yeah.
At the start, bearing in mind, if I swam 25 metres, I was out of breath. I wasn't a good swimmer. I was a classic dad. I could dunk my children, throw them in from the side, swim a width, and that's about it.
Yeah, but that's all you needed to do up until that point.
Yeah, so it was totally new for me. I've never really mixed into swimming other than the odd bit of surfing. But I started in the February, and it was initially just...
So cold then?
Yeah, that's it. It was the mental preparation for what I was taking on, because the race itself, on the day, we were estimating temperatures between 10 to 15 degrees.
Yeah, and when you're in that's cold.
It is cold, yeah. It doesn't sound a lot when you're used to the air temperature. As soon as you're in the water, it's a different kettle of fish.
Yeah.
And when I started training in the February, we were looking at temperatures. We were going into about 6.5-7 degrees in the water.
Yeah.
So it's just learning to, you know, keep my composure,
sure,
control my breathing, and they're two of the main important things when you're in cold water. If you start to panic, then
muscles seize up.
Yeah, you're in trouble, cramps, things like that. So that was the start of it. Yeah.
Okay, and it's human instinct not to get in freezing cold water, let alone to get in it and know you're going to be in it for a while.
Yeah.
By your own decision.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. Right, so you went straight, no pun intended, you went straight into the deep end and you started swimming outdoors, okay? You knew the outdoor swim was going to be a lake swim, so you didn't actually warm up and practice indoors. Tell us about, aside from the actual temperature, what about things like distances? How are you tracking your distances, improving them week to week or month to month?
So at the start, when it was cold, I was literally just aiming to improve the amount of time that I was in the water for. So the very first day, I can remember it, I was absolutely petrified. I had a fear of cold water anyway, because back in 2016, it was a bit of a dare to do a charity dip on Boxing Day, and I did about 20 metres and had to scramble to the side, didn't complete it. My wife did, and it's just been banter ever since. So that's one of the reasons why we chose it.
Sure.
But yeah, at the start, it was just the psychological thing, getting over the fear of getting in. And we were doing distances of, you know, 20 metres, and then I'd get out, and that was that. Next week, you know, I'd been working up to 50 metres, breaststroke. And then once I realised that actually I can do it, and this was one of the reasons why I chose this, is because it's something I wanted to remind myself that we can do anything. Do you know what I mean? And a lot of it is just fear that is getting in the way.
Yeah.
So once
fear being us.
Yeah.
So we're getting our own way.
Yeah.
Mentally, physically, emotionally, what's in our way? Not the cold water, but us. We get in our own way.
Yeah. It's amazing what you can actually do if you decide to tell yourself I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And once I'd started to see results and progression. It went from there. It got better as my results were coming in quicker.
Give us an example of five, six weeks into it.
Yeah, so 5 or 6 weeks into it, the big one for me, we were training at Activities Away at Lincoln at the bottom of the A46 there. And when it starts to get water temperature about 12 degrees, they open the full lake, and one lap of that is half a mile.
Right. Lap, it's like a circle.
Yeah, lap of the lake, yeah. Okay. So before that, they marked out a 200-metre lap with boys, and we were working on achieving, you know, I did my first 200-metre swim, and that was great. Then I did fours, sixes, and 800 metres, which is about a half a mile. Once I'd done the 800 metres on the smaller laps, and they opened the big lake, and I decided to go and do my 800 metres in one big lap. Once I'd done that, I sort of knew then,
you know,
I'm on a roll here.
So as far as you go out into the lake, you know you've got it in you to get back.
Yeah. Okay. That's the thing. It's a mental approach to 800 metres in a small lap where you're close to the edge, the safety zone's there, because you know people can see you, or you're going to do a big lap and get out there, you've got to swim all the way to the bottom. If something goes wrong, you know you've got to swim back. So
yeah, sure.
Even though it's the same distance.
Are you out of sight of anyone on the banks then?
Yeah, I mean, there are marshals out there on the jet skis and that. However, when you swim in front crawl, you're looking down. So sure. It is at the start, until you learn to occupy your mind, it's quite lonely.
Yeah, there's nothing to see.
No,
you're not sightseeing.
No, you're not, and you're not having a chat with your mate like you would be running next to him either. So it's just learning to cope with those different conditions.
All right.
And it was amazing looking at the difference of doing 800 meters in a smaller controlled lap to then going out and committing to to doing the big one.
Yeah.
Same distance, but psychologically it was a big step.
Yeah, that is a big step. It's a big battle.
Tell
us, okay, what about, all right, now, full disclosure, Joe came to our centre, came into good condition in Lincoln for some of the his recovery and remedial work.
Yeah.
And you came and saw us for sports massage therapy.
Yeah.
Okay, what were you having done? In the appointments?
So on the sports massage, it was really beneficial for my upper body mainly. That's the main muscle groups that you use for front crawl. So we were looking at shoulders, lats, triceps, chest. Yeah. Once I'd started to progress into my training where I was doing bigger swims, my technique was developing more. So I was working those muscles, and I was pushing harder. Yeah, it made a phenomenal difference, really.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so essentially, we in coming for your appointments, what that did, that freed up knotted up tissue, it freed up tight tissue, soft tissue, muscle, and even ligaments and tendons, the connective tissue. When you mentioned shoulders, back, chest, you know, you've got your deltoids, your pectorals, you mentioned the lats, the rhomboids, even the obliques. What about your neck? Anything?
Yeah, we did look at my neck a little bit, because obviously when you're swimming, you're looking down, but you need to know where you're going. So quite often you're sort of bobbing your head back
periscope
constantly.
Yeah.
So that was an area that we'd focus on. I didn't have too much trouble with it personally, because I don't sight maybe as often as I should, which was one of the downfalls at the start of the training, because I couldn't swim in a straight line.
But, who can, apart from someone who tries it?
So, obviously, you do work that neck quite a lot more than you realise.
If you're lifting your head up out of the water, and I'm not a swimming coach, but I'm surmising that every time you lift your head up out of the water, whether you're looking forward, left or right, you're putting what we would know in my line of work as a compressive load on the back of your neck, on your cervical spine. And the muscles will flex and extend, but what sits behind those muscles is your neck, your spine, and of course you are lifting your chin up to get out of the water and breathe and look. So I can imagine, especially if you're someone that has to take a breath every four strokes or something like that. Talking of which, how many front crawl strokes did you have? A pattern? Was it 1, 2, 3?
Yeah,
breathe.
Did,
or?
Yeah, it was really good for me, because I had no knowledge on swimming at all. Everything I picked up was from coaching, and which meant that I didn't tend to fall into bad habits. So for me, my rhythm of breath was I would breathe every third stroke, and what that did was it made me breathe on the opposite side every time, so it encouraged my role in my swim.
So you don't become too dominant on one side.
Yeah, and you know, it encourages that role when you're going through the water, which is one technique that you look to try and progress as part of your front crawl, and that came naturally from breathing on alternate sides.
Yeah, excellent.
And it's a good rhythm, easy rhythm to get into.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3. Okay, so, right, now, talk about, touch on nutrition. Tell our listeners what your nutritional lifestyle is anyhow.
Yeah,
it's the big one I know about.
Yeah, so I am vegan, I've been vegan for 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, my main sport was martial arts and kickboxing, and that was what I was training at the time when I decided to try, to be vegan. and then it ended up that I didn't look back. So yeah, I've been eating as a vegan all the way through the training for this event.
Yeah, and that is that's something which we should really take into account. No, I'm not a vegan. I like meat. Okay, I'm a meat eater. I'm a carnivore. I'm a tyrannosaur. Okay, but I can imagine training for any event like that, whether it be an endurance event, power, strength. If you didn't have to change your diet dramatically when you took up the swimming training, it was already there. You already knew what it was like to face physical adversity in martial arts and fitness training on a vegan lifestyle. And of course, you're doing a physical job at Zen Gardening as well, landscaping and gardening. That in itself, right? Okay, taking that into account, then, did you have to add any other types of nutrition or even supplementation during the swim?
I didn't have to add. I didn't have to add nutrition. The main thing was just upping my calorie intake. You know, if I'm in the lake swimming for quite a long period of time, you can burn up to over 4,000 calories in one session.
Yeah.
So that's more than most people can eat in a day anyway.
Yeah.
So you have to be really careful not to get into a calorie deficit.
Sure.
That was it for me. I just used to eat as much as I could.
Of anything?
And I wasn't too strict either, because one thing that I noticed quite quickly when I started to swim was it was different to a lot of other sports and exercises because of the power to weight ratio when you're in the water.
Yep.
So you don't weigh as much in the water as what you'd weigh on land.
Okay.
The other thing is as well, I wasn't too concerned about my body fat going up slightly because it counters the cold.
Well, we need fats. You're right.
So
there too.
I wasn't worried about that. I just ate, to be honest, as much as I could.
I looked at when you first took the swim on, Joe, and I actually looked in old study books and actually on some modern information as well, talking about the super swimmer Michael Phelps.
Yeah,
and he would put away anything between 5,000 and 6,000 calories a day like it was nothing.
Yeah.
And they showed the 8 meals a day that he would go through and what it was. And of course it was good, healthy food, but it was also what some people would consider to be junk food.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. He just needed more calories.
Yeah.
And there's only so much broccoli and chicken you can eat.
Your metabolism goes through the roof. And this is one thing as well that I noticed when I first became a vegan, is to eat 2,500 calories of clean vegetables, mm-hmm. or, you know, and healthy carbohydrates, you'd be eating buckets, wheelbarrows of the stuff, you know. So you do have to look at other ways, potentially, if you're struggling to stomach that much food, to keep those calories up. So you are looking at supplements, bars. For me, it's just a case of making sure that they're suitable for vegans. However, I didn't really rely too much on the supplements.
Mm-hmm. What about your water, taking on fluids?
Yeah, I drink regularly as a bit of a habit. So for me, the only time I noticed I was struggling was one milestone where I hit my first 3K. I can remember I was swimming and it was the first time I noticed I'd become dehydrated in the water.
Yeah.
And this is something that will catch you out, because when you're training or exercising on land, you're
sweating.
Yeah. So you notice that you're sweating and you're potentially run the risk of becoming dehydrated. When you're in the water, you don't notice it
because you're wet, your mouth's wet, your body's wet,
and it catches you out. And and that was a hard lesson to learn, because I felt,
and you're 3K in as well,
bad. Yeah, I felt bad for a couple of days. I definitely was dehydrated. So you do have to make sure to remember to take a break, even if it's, you know, a minute. You swim to the side, take your fluids on board, and then back out again.
Superb. Yeah. Okay. Right, let's talk about the mental performance. Now, I play golf, and I'm not for one moment comparing a round of golf with a five-mile outdoor swim, but I know after 4 hours of golf, especially if it's in a local competition just to try and get some points, it takes a lot of mental concentration.
Yeah.
Now, I can imagine that is tenfold if you're swimming 5K in open water. What goes in and out of the mind?
In a way, if you was to refer it to a game of golf, it is slightly similar, because like being out on the course, the weather conditions, all the conditions can change within the click of a finger, and you can be having the best time in the water 1 minute, and all of a sudden you can then be in quite a sticky situation, and you have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to adjust to that quite quickly.
Okay.
So, for me, after having completed the event now, it's something that I've learned. It's quite simple. You either decide you can do it and you're going to do it, or you decide you can't do it and you're not going to do it. And
you made that decision.
And it's just making that choice, and in black and white, that's it.
Yeah.
And everybody can do it.
Yeah.
So you've just got to decide that. And that tested me actually on the event, because it was the worst conditions they'd had for that event in years. And I can remember on the first lap, we got down the first half of the lake, and when we were turning to come back across, the heavens opened, big old storm, wind everywhere, and all of a sudden, a lot of people, you know, they were panicking. We were panicking. For me, I quite enjoyed it, because I've sort of rookied in a bit with the surfing, and it didn't faze me as much as potentially it fazed some other swimmers, you know.
What the added rain? You're wet anyhow. So what is it?
It's the choppiness of the water.
Yeah.
You know, and it maybe if you haven't trained a variety of strokes or methods, it's counteracting the waves hitting your arms, you know, smashing into your arms with your high elbow. You need to make sure you're getting that elbow up higher, so you're chopping down into the water, because otherwise it ends up that the water's controlling you more than you're controlling it.
Well, you can't. Well, no swimmer can. None of us can control the weather.
No.
So, like, if you would you have jumped? Would you and your compatriots would you have got into the water and started swimming if it was already raining?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
You say you were anyway. To be honest, there's something quite therapeutic about it
as
well.
I can imagine.
The energy that it develops within the water when the rain's coming down. Yeah, it's pretty magic. To be
honest. Unless we've got a heavy storm and lightning. If it's raining and windy and choppy, you'd still make that decision had already been made anyhow. So you're going out.
Yeah,
you're going
in. I think you don't notice it too much. It's more the wind. That's the thing that that will make the difference, you know.
Right. What? Tell us about any. Do you get any bad injuries?
Not really. I was quite fortunate that I've got the experience of training for events in other disciplines, and I did notice about 2/3 into my training for the event, I was starting to feel a bit of a twinge on my lap, and I think that was maybe from trying to reach as far as I could in my pullback and my extension of my stroke. I just laid easy. I contacted Good Condition, and they gave me some advice, and within a couple of days, it was gone. It was out of my mind. So
excellent.
I was fortunate.
We were happy to support you in that charity swim, Joe. And you know what, irrespective of the charity, we would have supported you in the way, because I can understand how physically I'm trying to understand how physically and mentally demanding that is. All right, finally, equipment.
Yeah.
Now, I know you had some fancy 007 style suit that you were wearing, wetsuit.
Yeah, that's
tell
right.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the suit came on. I started wearing the suit towards the last part of my training. I didn't swim in a wetsuit for the majority of it, purely because for me, the majority of this challenge was the mental side of it. So I wanted to put myself into the conditions that were going to test me, you know, push me to, am I going to stop or not? So I swam without the wetsuit for quite a while.
What, and a month, then, 2 months?
Well, I started the training in February, and I put the wetsuit on in the July.
So you put the wetsuit on?
Yeah.
When it's actually warmer?
Yeah, that's right.
Now that's counterintuitive, because I would think you would have started with that in February.
No, the only reason I put the wetsuit on towards the end was because it was mandatory that you wore a wetsuit in the event.
Oh, okay.
The style that, you know, that you swim wearing a wetsuit is slightly different.
Yeah.
You're more buoyant in a wetsuit, so you can relax your core, if you like, a little bit more to keep you on top of the water, but you're more restricted on your upper body.
Okay.
Just because obviously it's tight, it holds you, so you have to adjust and obviously develop those muscles to counteract
to move
that.
In it. So who manufactures them? What's the go-to
so
name?
My wetsuit was from Blue 70.
Yeah.
There's quite a few different manufacturers. That's a big mainstream one.
I see.
Yeah, it was great for me. I also had obviously my goggles. and a neoprene swim cap, which made a big difference. You know,
is that how they identify you, by the cap on the head? Is that how they see you, the marshals or whatever?
Yeah, so on the day, they all give you a swim cap, which will be a bright colour, yellow or a green. And you're also required to wear a mini safety buoy, which straps around your waist, right. And it's on a piece of cord, and you tow that.
They're
pretty cool.
And that's dragging behind you. How far is it? On like a two meter line or what?
About a meter. Okay. Yes, yeah, it's at your side. The one for me, it was decent because it had a little pocket inside it, so I could tow my energy gels along with me and a bottle of water as well.
Gotcha.
If I needed a quick bit of water or an energy boost, I could tread water, open my bag, take that on, put it back and carry on.
Your very own Sherpa, swimming Sherpa.
Yeah, okay. That's it, yeah.
Without the cost. Alright, tell us about any compatriots, anyone else that you know. Did someone else start with you, or did you get to make friends and some colleagues whilst you're training?
Yeah, so a friend of mine, he got me into the cold water swimming purely because I said to him that I wanted to raise money for these charities and I wanted to do something that would be respected. It would have been easy for me to say I'm going to train to run a marathon or I'm going to do a kickboxing fight. I already had backgrounds in those disciplines, so he said to me, swim Buttermere 10k.
Take yourself out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, people will respect that. I said, yeah, okay. I didn't have a clue what I was letting myself in for. And then it dawned on me at the start of the training, the severity of what I said I was going to do.
Yeah.
James, he got me into it initially. And then, quite quickly from spending time at activities away, really welcoming, I got free coaching on technique from some top swimmers down there who really sort of bought into what I was doing and quite quickly turned me into a half decent swimmer.
Your colleague James, had he done anything like that himself, or and he, did he start
yeah,
the same
yeah.
day as you?
So James James Rogers, he's a friend of mine, he'd swam the Buttermere 5K race the previous year, which again wasn't great conditions, and he also does the winter swim club activities away.
Okay.
Basically is where you pay and have an induction in the November to learn the dangers and also how to deal with swimming in cold water,
mm-hmm.
and then you can go and swim in it, and that drops down to temperatures in the minus degrees, that's basically what he had already done, brought me into it, and it's gone
and
from
doubled
there.
It from 5 to 10. All right, what about what do you think in terms of you mentioned it was 10k, how does it compare? I happen to know someone personally who can run the 10k in 29-30 minutes, and that in itself is a feat.
Yeah.
But to swim 10K, how long did it take in outdoor?
Yeah, so my time for the event was 3 hours 47 minutes.
How does that compare with open water swimmers who belong to clubs that would swim that on a regular basis?
The guy that won my race, he won it, and I think he swam it in 2 hours 11.
Crikey.
Yeah, and so he was averaging throughout that race, through those conditions, he was averaging 100 metre splits in a minute and a half. Through the
open
whole
water front crawl. Is front crawl the only stroke that it's allowed, or is it just
no? It's purely your choice.
I can't imagine too many people were doing the butterfly.
No, it probably did happen. It probably did happen, but I don't know if they'd have done it for the whole thing.
No, could you imagine like the training? Yeah. All right, Joe. So we are actually going to touch base again on our podcast show with your physical achievements, and one of them, as we know, you come from a martial arts background, and we'll come back to that on another day. Just to sign out, tell us how much did you raise for the charity?
Yes, we raised just over £800.
Not shabby at all, sir.
Yeah, so well, really done. Pleased with that.
Yeah, £800, and is that a split? 400
yeah,
each?
Yeah, 400 each to both charities.
Yeah, okay. Are you going to do it again?
Definitely, yeah. I'm definitely going to be swimming Buttermere next year.
Same event, yeah.
Same event, yeah. Better time.
Yeah.
And look at other events as well that we can progress towards.
And possibly even rope someone in to do it with you as well.
Yeah, you're only good at swimming.
Well, I'm built for it, but crikey. I'll stick to 18 holes of golf.
Yeah.
And you tell me about the swim. So I'll take my hat off to you. If I play a good round of golf and you come back and say I've just done 8K on my training, it's going to make me just shrivel up and go back indoors again, you know. So superb. Right, finally, Joe, on a final note, just remind our listeners again, we've talked about your passion and your charitable work and your good athletic performance. Tell us again about your company, your business, what you do and how they can find you.
Yeah, so my company is Zen Garden and Paving Services. We offer paving services for driveways, but our main passion and speciality is garden creations. So if you're looking for a unique outdoor living space in your garden, then definitely worth looking at us. You can find us on www.zengardenandpavingservices.co.uk. Find us on Facebook under that business name as well, and you can also follow us on Instagram.
Are you currently on a project at the moment?
We are, yeah. We've just about to finish a beautiful limestone patio, yellow limestone.
In Lincoln?
This one's in Boston.
Yeah.
And new lawn, planting plan, fences, so full garden makeover.
Yeah. And in terms of weeks of work, if you didn't take any more inquiries or orders now, how long you got work for you and your colleagues?
We potentially have booked the year now. We've probably got one or two slots for some medium-sized projects.
Superb.
But
so you're popular, you're busy.
Yeah, we are, yeah. Which is nice to know going into winter that we've got that work already booked in.
Well, I happen to know two people, without naming them, that play golf at the same club I'm a member of, that have had work done by yourself, and they were really happy with it. Yeah, so I can attest. I've seen your work on the internet, and I know two people who've had you go and design this superb, what do you call it, extension of the home outdoors into the garden.
That's it, medicine for the soul,
medicine for the soul
through the healing powers of nature.
Alright, till next time, Joe, thanks very much for coming in. I'm Tristan Lowe from Good Condition, interviewing Joe Cheatham of Zen Gardening. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Well done.
Cheers.